Hearing now. This is Instant Inspiration. Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing, sharing Hearing Now. We are all accustomed to hearing later, not hearing now. We're accustomed to going through incidences and programs, and we don't hear what's going on. Ellen and I returned from a trip to Nigeria and Ghana, and Italy and Switzerland and stuff like that. And on our trip to these places, we remember what we want to remember. We don't remember what really took place. Now we're listening to this tape here from Nigeria and from Ghana. And as we listen to this tape, we're hearing what was going on all around us, which we had shut off, which we hadn't really listened to. We didn't really hear the children playing outside the building where we were. We didn't, the buildings had no windows, so the noise was as much inside as outside. And now as we listen to it on the tape, we hear all the children at play outside, talking and laughing and singing and doing things, and we hear our own talk on the inside, and we sometimes wonder, now, are the children so obstreperous? They are not paying attention to our talk? Are we not getting their attention? What's going on? Well, we're hearing what's going on the outside as well as on the inside. And when we are having the experience, we only hear ourselves. Now, what that means is that the children in the program, and the adults in the program, are hearing the noises on the outside just as the tape recorder is hearing them. They're hearing the noises, quote, quote, on the inside, just as the tape recorder is hearing them. They're hearing our lecture, our talk, our sharing, and they're hearing the noises on the outside. They're hearing all these things. And they're hearing what their mother and father would say to them, what their parents would tell them, what their spouses would tell them. They're hearing what their friends would tell them if they knew that they were attending a program such as this, which is all good, of course. But they're hearing all this thing. All of this information that we're giving them is going into their consciousness based upon a great many factors. And we just think, hey, they only have ears for me, you know, and that's rather a special desire for anyone listening to you only to have ears for you. But I think it's important that we discuss this factor right now in front of Ellen and Ingeborg and Dorothea and Herbert, even Herbert, and Button and Love. And Button's name is what?
The Duke from Pomerania.
The Duke of Pomerania. And what's Love's name?
King.
King. No, it's for by. But the thing is, that's where the way we came into this household. Okay, now, how are they listening to us? Are they listening to us in the things that we say? Now, what happens when we're talking and Button is looking in your eyes and Love is looking in your eyes, and then Ellen opens up the microwave oven, what happens? They're no longer looking in our eyes. They're dashing to that microwave oven thinking, maybe a wiener's coming out of there. They hear a kettle on the stove. Maybe there's a wiener there. You know, they're very much concerned. And we think they're very interested in what we're doing, and they're not. Their vision is around satisfying us so that we'll give them wieners. Or whatever else may be served. But we must be very careful about these things because we are not heard by what we think we're heard by. We are heard by a whole lot of other things. A whole lot of other things. Now, Ellen was talking on the phone to Daniel, and Daniel was explaining some things that were quite important to Ellen. But Ellen was also hearing this tape of her talk in Nigeria, and she wanted to hear that. And she wanted to hear that more than she wanted to hear the information that she was getting. And so she cut the information short, said, I'll call you back later, and then talked to us. Now, we got the 800 number for our students and our ministers and for people who can't afford it a long time ago. And we've given out to everybody, including Daniel. We've given it out to everybody. It's printed on our business card. And you can be sure that these people are using that number. Now, all of a sudden, Daniel, who is working for us, and we're paying him, happens to let it drop that he has an 800 number. Now, why hasn't he told us about this a long time ago? Because every call we make to him is long distance, down into San Diego. It's a long distance local call, right? But it's long distance nonetheless. Now, you see, we hear that. Now, what did I hear when Daniel said 800 number? I heard, Daniel, why did you withhold it from us for so long? Why didn't you tell us right away, as you told your other clients that you're trying to curry their favor? Why didn't you tell us, you see? Now, he might be listening to this too, and that might be interesting too. But, you see, everyone should be treated equally. Everyone should be treated alike. We give our 800 number to our students who can afford it and to our students who can't afford it. And to the students who can afford it and use our 800 number, they will have their comeuppance. They will have their time when they'll be facing dire circumstances. You know, what did I do to do this? They could have afforded to use the normal telephone to call us, but they used the 800 number. We had one woman who was calling us regularly, and we felt she was using the 800 number, which is okay. But she had so many problems in her heart, and she was calling us maybe several times a day, and for a long period of time, and from Florida. And so one day we said to her, you know, you really should give a donation for all the work that we're doing for you here. And she says, why is that, you know? And so we didn't answer her anymore. Then I said to her one day, I said, boy, any woman who has as much problems, and many problems as you do with finances, and uses our 800 number is pretty bad. Pretty bad. Because you're taking the money that we would use to help people who can't afford it, and you're using it for yourself and being very selfish about it. Well, she didn't say a thing then. But 2 weeks later, in one of her conversations, she says, I never use the 800 number. So perhaps at that point, she stopped using it. But you see, there's a little secret here. We have a list of all the people who use the 800 number. Their telephone number is placed right there on the calling list from the 800 number. We know what each one is because we're paying for it. So we have a right to know who's calling. And we have a right to know how long. And some people call 4 and 5 times a night, our dial a healing prayer, mm-hmm. on our 800 number. And 4 or 5 times a night because they want to hear my voice, they want to hear the positive words and things like that. Now, interestingly enough, these people say, oh, well, you're a rich organization, you can afford these things. You're a rich organization, you can afford these things. You're a rich organization, you can afford these things. That's not the point. Are you a rich person who should be affording these things? Are you a person who should be paying your own way? Just because welfare is given out to people who have no money does not mean that you should get welfare. True, you paid for it. Everybody is paying for it, but you should not have welfare if you don't get it. I had a very dear friend. I still have a dear friend. She's getting dearer all the time. How old is she now? 82?
Almost 80.
Almost 80? Yeah, she's almost 80. That's right, she's, yeah, like you. And so she's almost 80. And we drove many places together. I took her a lot of places. She was a good student for a long time, still is. And we would go to places and all the parking spaces were open for the handicapped people, but not for non-handicapped people, you know. Non-handicapped people stay healthy because they have so far to walk. They're like four or five cars, you know, big deal. Well, I said to her, well, if Mary, you think I should park here? She says, you may. She says, but I wouldn't. Because that's saying I'm handicapped. And I'm never going to tell anybody in the entire world that I'm handicapped. Even if I were handicapped, I wouldn't use it as a way of getting something for myself. Because I don't believe in that. She says, I don't want the world to think I'm handicapped. And if the world would think it, it would be starting with me, and I would be the first one to think. A very wise lady. Very wise lady. And whenever I see a handicapped place, I think of Edith Berry. I couldn't park there. I couldn't park there anyhow. But I mean, I couldn't park there. I think, nope, I don't want anyone to ever think that I am a handicapped person, that I need that sort of stuff. You know, I don't need it. You know, I don't need it. And are you considered handicapped? Are you? Yeah.
Yeah, I have a handicap.
Oh, you're considered handicapped? Mm-hmm. But why are you considered handicapped?
Because of the fire and the lungs.
Oh, I see. Because of things that are all perfect now, huh?
Oh, yes, sir. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Do you use your handicap privilege even though you don't need it?
Yeah, I use it. Well, I wouldn't say I wouldn't need it.
It's kind of convenient, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My knees sometimes give out. Oh, I got it because it's...
Now, we're saying we don't want people calling us handicapped.
Yes.
And if we park in a handicapped place, people say, oh, you're handicapped. Mm-hmm. Or if you're not, you better well be.
Yeah, you'll be fine.
Yeah, not there. Right here.
Oh.
And you know, you'll be punished by being handicapped. If you pretend that you need a handicapped place to be, and you're not handicapped, you'll be handicapped soon. I guarantee you that. Because you put that cause in motion that you're handicapped, and you may do any number of stupid, silly things to create that, but you'll create it. You see, we're only hearing what we want to hear. We're only seeing what we want to see. We have to be very, very careful. And I don't want anyone ever to label me for not listening, not hearing, not being very much aware. You see, when you are a teacher, when you are a professor, when you are a lecturer, when you are a speaker, you are in many places. And I know that Ellen is going to follow me, that she's going to speak, so I introduce her. I say, now I'd like to have you hear from our chairman of the board and our president, and I go down all her titles. And I said, she's going to teach us how to sing la 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 la. And they love it. They love it. My God, the president's coming here to teach us to sing la 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 la. And it's humility. That's humility. But I tell them that she's going to do this, and I introduce her. And I introduce her always with a phraseology that allows her to speak as long or as short as she likes. Like, for instance, I will say, she's now going to tell us what it is like to be a monk in a monastery. Now, she could say, it's hell, or it's wonderful, or it's whatever, you know. And she could, you know, do what she wishes. And she could cover the meals, cover the clothing, cover the responsibility, cover the prayer time, cover the study time, cover the work time, cover, you know, or she could just take one of those things. And she'd be perfectly within her realm to do it. But you see, when you are on top of yourself, you make sure that everybody else is on top too. You don't leave them dangling. And if they're dangling, if Ellen would get up there and she'd say, well, to me, being a monk is one of the most beautiful experiences of my life. And that's what I have to say. And I would immediately stand up and I'd say, bravo, bravo, Ellen. That is fantastic. You said it in so few words, what it means to everyone who is a monk, you know. you're making her look like an angel or like a prince or something like that, you know. And this is what we all should do. We're the creator of our world. We should create everybody in our world doing wonderful, beautiful, fantastic things, because that's what life's all about. And hearing now. We want to live in the now, act in the now, hear in the now. And may I suggest to you, madame, you don't need your handicap card. I would put it away in your glove compartment or something like that. But if you use it, you're going to need to use it. I say you're whole and perfect now.
Amen.
I don't say that maybe someday all your wounds will be healed. I say they're healed now. And they cannot be healed now if you keep encouraging them to be played with and petted, you know. And that's not what we want to do. And I say, any person who goes on a spiritual retreat at any time for any purpose is going on a spiritual retreat. They are not doing the business of the organization. They are not doing anything else. They're going on a spiritual retreat. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because that the work of the organization is not spiritual too and everything else is not spiritual too. It's just that why did you take yourself apart from the organization unless perhaps you couldn't stand the people? You know, that's always a possibility. Or you couldn't stand the conditions or whatever, you know. But be real careful. Be real careful. Honor yourself. I would say that a person who can't stand the people and can't stand the work that they're doing, and then they go on a retreat in absolute silence and say nothing to anybody, and they come off of that retreat and they're balanced and they feel great, I say that's just wonderful, you know. But if they're going to say, I got to do the work, I've got to do this and that, they can't get along without me, you're dead. You're dead. All the time you spent alone on your spiritual retreat, it was not done to any value. This goes for all of you.
I know.
This goes for all of you. If Ellen goes on a retreat and she takes along her computer and her book work, if Ellen's going to take a retreat and write a book or write a story or do something like that, that's different. That's different. But if she's going to go and just do office business, that's not right. And Inga, if she's going to go on a retreat and then paint the houses here, that's not right. But if Inga is going to go on a retreat and she's going to paint paintings like a Mahler, that'd be great, right? See the difference? Hearing now, living in the now, enjoying it now. And I love you because I love me.